I'm Josie Briggs. I'm editor-in-chief of the Journal of the American Society of Nephrology. Each month, I have the privilege of choosing a couple articles from the issue, from each issue, that I think will be of particular interest to our readers and listeners. Today, I am joined by Matt Griffith. Matt is a longstanding and esteemed member of the JASN editorial team. He is professor of transplant biology at the National University of Ireland. Matt, thanks for joining this conversation. I'm very glad to be able to call on your expertise on the topic we are discussing today. As our listeners know well, the kidney transplant patient has a dual vulnerability in the COVID pandemic. They are both at greater risk of serious disease and have impaired immune responses to vaccination. In this issue of JASN, we have two papers that offer some insights into the immune response to COVID in the transplant patient. So I'm grateful to have Matt to help me think about this work, since he brings a substantial expertise in the immunologic methods. So Matt, the first paper I wanted to talk about, I'd like to hear your thoughts about it. It's a paper by Paolo Crivedi and co-authors. The title is Delayed Kinetics of IgG, but not IgA, Anti-Spike Antibodies in Transplant Recipients Following SARS-CoV-2 Infection. This manuscript is an example of a number of studies trying to clarify the factors that may result in more severe COVID disease in the transplant patient. As we know well, this is and challenging given multiple comorbidities that the transplant patient has. So what did these authors focus on?
Hi, Josie. It's a pleasure to talk with you about these two very interesting papers. Just in regard to this first study, the authors focused on comparing antibody responses to SARS-CoV viral antigens at early and later time points after diagnosis of infection in kidney transplant recipients and in age-matched immunocompetent controls. And in doing so, they aim to determine whether the characteristics and the kinetics of anti-SARS-CoV-2 antibody responses are different in transplant recipients compared to non-immunosuppressed people. And I think a strength of this study was the use of a validated multiplex assay, and this allowed them to detect and quantify multiple antibody subtypes against a panel of viral antigens in serum samples that were collected from patients and controls at different time points following infection. And I think it's worth noting that the baseline immunosuppressive regimen for the transplant recipients was predominantly calcineurin inhibitor, mycophenolate mofetil, and corticosteroids. So I think this is a fairly generalizable study in that regard. And the level of COVID-19 severity of both the cohorts was generally high, particularly among those sampled early after diagnosis.
So, and what did they find? What are their main conclusions?
So the results showed, as we might expect, that immunocompetent patients tended to develop high levels of IgG antibodies against SARS-CoV spike protein epitopes within the first 14 days after diagnosis, which would be considered an early humoral immune response, and also maintained similarly high levels at later time points. In contrast, however, the kidney transplant patients sampled early had strikingly lower anti-SARS-CoV-2 IgG antibody levels against the spike protein, while those samples later had levels comparable to their immunocompetent counterparts. So the authors concluded that these findings were consistent with a delayed IgG immune response. And this is really the, you could say, the main mature antibody response that we rely upon to protect us in many infections. Following SARS-CoV-2 infection, these patients could eventually catch up as regards developing higher circulating levels of IgG antibodies. Furthermore, the kidney transplant recipients developed the same predominant IgG isotypes or subtypes and similar early anti-SARS-CoV-2 IgA and IgM responses to those developed by immunocompetent patients.
So there's good news and bad news in these findings. Is the delayed IgG response a predictable effect of the immunosuppression?
So in general, the results are consistent with the mechanisms of action of the typical immunosuppressive agents taken by kidney transplant recipients. These drugs, especially calcineurin inhibitors, most directly impair the activation of naive antigen-specific T cells, and this can produce a secondary deficit in the development of antibody responses occurring as a result of reduced T cell help or T cell cytokine stimuli to B cells. Now, this may explain why the less T cell dependent IgM and IgA responses were relatively intact. Now, mycophenolate mofetil may also have some direct inhibitory effects on B cell activation, and reducing or stopping this agent has more or less become standard practice in treating transplant recipients who are hospitalized for COVID-19. In cohorts such as the one studied here, modification of immunosuppressive therapy during the course of treatment might partly explain the eventual development of a stronger antibody response.
Right. So there's more to learn here, but interesting findings. Okay, this paper I thought would be interesting to talk about is by Schutzenmeier and her co-authors, and it is looking at transplant at vaccine responses. It looks at B and T cell responses after a third, or sometimes called booster dose, of SARS-CoV-2 vaccine in kidney transplant recipients. So what did these authors do?
So this interesting study focused on a group of 25 kidney transplant recipients who had failed to mount a significant anti-SARS-CoV antibody response to full courses of the Pfizer-BioNTech messenger RNA vaccine. This is a particularly vulnerable group of patients who have not responded to the primary vaccination course. These subjects received a third dose of either Pfizer-BioNTech or AstraZeneca vaccine and had antibody, B-cell, and T-cell responses to the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein studied in well-timed blood samples. And of note here again, the patients studied were predominantly later after transplant and were mostly receiving triple drug immunosuppression that included mycophenolate mofetil. Once again, I think the methodologies are a key strength of the study. By employing a clinical-grade immunoassay for anti-spike antibodies, as well as an antigen neutralization antibody assay and sensitive flow cytometry assays, which allowed the authors to detect and functionally characterize antigen-specific B and T cells, the authors were able to generate more holistic profiles of the vaccine immune responses at earlier and later time points after the third doses.
Right. The inclusion of both B and T cell studies was relatively unique in this body of research. What are their main findings and conclusions?
So in regard to antibodies against the spike protein, only three of the 25 transplant recipients had developed a positive response by 7 days after the third dose. However, by 3 to 4 weeks, 9 of the 25, or 36%, were categorized as responders. And of the 20 patients for whom antibody neutralization capacity was studied, 7 had a positive assay. The positive antibody responses were numerically more frequent in patients who received the heterologous vaccine, the AstraZeneca vaccine, for their third doses. But this difference wasn't statistically significant, so we can't make a strong conclusion there. Overall, from the antibody assays, it could be concluded that third vaccine doses resulted in potentially protective responses in approximately 1 in 3 previously unresponsive kidney transplant recipients. Now, in regard to the T cell responses, I think the study results were more complex. An interesting point is that spike protein antigen-specific CD4, or helper T cells, were detectable in the blood of almost all subjects after both the second and the third doses of vaccine. However, Functional assays indicated that the spike protein-specific helper T cells were more numerous in those with stronger antibody responses to the third dose. And furthermore, third vaccine doses were associated with higher numbers of T cells that were capable of producing multiple immune stimulatory cytokines in response to spike protein antigens. So I think this suggests that kidney transplant recipients who failed to mount antibody responses after a two-dose vaccine schedule may yet have developed some antiviral T-cell responses, and these could be further matured or strengthened by a third dose.
Right. Important questions. We're all awaiting studies soon to be reported on the crossover between vaccines, another important issue that is only peripherally addressed here. The authors suggest that individual humoral responsiveness should be monitored in transplant recipients. What do you think? Are we ready to do that? And do we know how to interpret the findings?
So, Josie, I think more research is definitely needed to link the results of specific infection and vaccine-induced antibody and T-cell assays to the clinical outcomes of COVID-19 frequency and severity in our vulnerable kidney transplant patients. However, both of the studies we've just talked about help us to better understand that our transplant recipients are capable of mounting complex immune responses that are potentially highly protective, but in comparison to their immunocompetent counterparts, these responses are more variable, they have delayed kinetics, and they may have some specific functional deficits. And all of these factors make it very difficult for us to advise individual patients about their level of risk, what it's safe for them to do during and after vaccination. From this perspective, I believe that it will be essential to incorporate assays of anti-SARS-CoV-2 immune responses into our clinical transplant practice sooner rather than later, even as we continue to learn more about their predictive accuracy and their limitations. After all, the transplant field has been at the forefront of successfully translating immunological testing into innovative clinical practice for decades.
Matt, that's a great point. And this is a highly vulnerable population that we want to take the very best care of we can. And understanding the complexity of the immune response is clearly a critical piece in that. So I really thank you for bringing your substantial expertise to the discussion of these two interesting papers. And thank you. Enjoy doing these conversations.
Thank you, Josie.
This podcast is copyrighted by the American Society of Nephrology. All rights reserved. All content in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be medical advice. This podcast should not be used in a medical emergency or for the diagnosis or treatment of any medical condition. Please consult your doctor or other qualified healthcare provider if you have any questions about any medical condition, or before taking any drug, changing your diet, or commencing or discontinuing any course of treatment. Thank you for listening to this podcast from the American Society of Nephrology.